Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, October 16th, 2017. I almost said 2016. And you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 105, I want to say?
Yes.
I think it's 105.
Also, 2016, like, you know, and usually when that mistake would be, like, yeah, that was a better year. No, it wasn't!
Well,
2016 sucked too.
It sucked too.
The future hadn't happened yet.
Right. But we all thought the turn, okay, it's just going to be this. It's just going to be this going forward. We'll be fine. It has, in fact, been 2017 instead, which is the less celebrities I love dying, more affronts on personal liberty and civil liberty, more affronts on healthcare programs and safety nets to prevent those of us at the lowest of the hierarchy from being stomped on. But, you know, David Bowie didn't die again this year, so there's that.
Great. 2017.
That's true.
David Bowie didn't die again.
You know, imagine what
would acquaintance be.
But imagine if, like, in January, it would have been, like, Donald Trump inauguration, and then, like, seconds later, David Bowie appeared, and we're like, yo, Ziggy Stardust, you're back! And then, like, 6 weeks later, he died again. That would have sucked. That would have been, like, everything we know is thrown into question.
He wouldn't have died again. He would have just formally left.
He would have
floated, right. And he said, he, like in Watchmen, like, Dr. Manhattan, he's just like, I'm done. Like, I'm deal with this shit on your own. Like,
those are the voices of course, Patrick Klepek, Rob Zachney, and Danica Herod. Thank you for joining me today for Waypoint Radio. Danielle is out in Florida or in Massachusetts with her family. I don't know where they're at this point on Monday, but that is where she is. Hope everything's going well with you, Danielle, if you're listening. How's everybody doing? How was the weekend?
Fine.
Sorry.
Fine.
It was a weekend.
I just switched a signal on my TV, and it's doing the wildest thing I've ever seen anything do. It's flashing, put the PS4 into rest mode over and over again, and I'd been watching Unprofessional Fridays from our friends over at Giant Bomb, and that's in the background, but in blood red, and it's
wow.
This is terrifying. This is a nightmare. I'm going to hit...
And the really weird thing is the PS4 is actually disconnected.
It should be in rest mode by now. I'm going to just turn this TV off and pretend that everything is okay.
I want to put myself into rest mode.
I was just trying to bring up another monitor, basically, but now it's doing this. what did everybody do this weekend? Everybody have, like, a decent enough time?
I cursed myself. Should I say fuck the Cubs instead of fuck the Dodgers? Because that didn't work out in my favor. The Cubs did not do...
Your Cubbies well. Didn't do well?
No.
The walk-off homer last night is where I started to feel like this is truly 2017.
Oh, buddy. Well, the good news is that you've been doing a thing. The good news for you is you didn't get really mad at the internet like me this weekend. Our industry.
I ignored the internet. I got out of there.
That's a good plan.
I've been doing this lately. I just don't look at the internet. I figure the New York Times and Washington Post push notifications and my friends who react to politics, they'll inform me when I need to chime in. Otherwise, I've just taken the stance that, not that there aren't big things that happen on the weekend.
Sure.
But I have taken the stance that I don't need to engage with it 7 days a week. And
right.
I just use Saturday and Sunday as, like, I'm going to be with my family, I'm going to play games, I'm going to watch movies, and I'm just, like, if I need to be brought in, like, I will muster it. But sometimes there are skirmishes that happen. Well, I'm saying, like, sometimes there are skirmishes that happen because people have more time. Not that those skirmishes aren't worth engaging with, but the virtue of, like, it's the weekend, everyone's staring at Twitter, time to go in.
Right.
I'm not saying this is that.
I think this is the other thing, right? Which is, first of all, the fact that this came out on the weekend at all is maybe part
revealing.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to set up what we're talking about?
Oh, is this the Naughty Dog thing?
Yeah, it's the Naughty Dog thing. Unless you had a different thing.
No, no. There's always a thing.
There's always a thing. But the one that made me mad on the internet was Naughty Dog.
So on Friday night, a former environmental artist at Naughty Dog, David Ballard, apologies for not knowing your pronunciation, went on Twitter and in a series of tweets, alleged that he was sexually harassed at Naughty Dog by a lead developer, and did not name the developer or give a whole lot of context on what happened, but...
Can we give some context onto what lead means? Because I think that's one of those.
Yeah, that means like senior. That means like someone that is, you know, this isn't someone down in the
QA. Level.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. is this is someone that would, you know, by naming a lead, they're saying it's someone that is in a position of power at the studio. Which, you know, as we, you know, have seen with Harvey Weinstein and lots of other instances of talking about sexual harassment, power dynamics are usually very much at play when these things happen. And so David alleged that this occurred in late 2015 and said that following that, his job, his work environment became, in his words, extremely toxic. Not too long after, he mentioned that he had a mental breakdown, which is at that point he sort of corporate kind of became involved to try and, I guess, help him out, or there was, you know, some sort of intervention with him, whether he reached out or whether his parent company, Sony, who owns Naughty Dog, and he, in the working through his psychological issues, he revealed that the sexual harassment had occurred. He claims that he was quickly fired within a day or so and offered roughly $20,000 to keep silent about what had happened. He chose to come forward because of the Harvey Weinstein reports in which, if somehow you have not noticed that he, in the New York Times and New Yorker, he was exposed as a serial harasser, abuser, right. and assaulter. In a number of publications. Rob, you had something you wanted to mention?
Yeah, just what day of the week is Ballard posting this on Twitter?
Friday night.
That's his Friday night. Yeah.
Okay.
So this
no, happens, I thought
it came out earlier.
I thought it was Saturday. He was tweeting like Saturday at noon. Or maybe Friday night.
No, he posted during the week.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Now I am actually...
I thought it was like Thursday night.
No, because this is actually October 14th is when these tweets went out.
Yeah, it was Saturday at
Saturday
noon.
Saturday afternoon. You're right. Saturday. Danica's totally right. Saturday at like
because Naughty Dog's statement. Naughty Dog's statement came out Sunday at 8 a.m.
Right.
So these statements, his tweets go out. They get retweeted, thousands of times. People are especially, sensitive to a lot of these stories because there's been, you know, sort of the aftermath of Harvey Weinstein, or actually we're still kind of in Harvey Weinstein.
We sure are. Who don't know, Harvey Weinstein is a film producer, studio executive, like was a big deal at Weinstein Company. Miramax has been like part of a lot of major like prestige small films, you know?
Yeah, the kind of movies that like, oh, I'm gonna go be in a blockbuster and then I'm gonna go be in an art film so I can be a serious actor, actress, and was very powerful, especially in the 90s, responsible for like bringing like Quentin Tarantino to the mainstream with movies like Pulp Fiction and stuff like that. And, which Shakespeare in Love, I think, was one of the big ones.
Totally.
So then Naughty Dog put out a statement, which I'll just go ahead and read in full just to give it proper context. We've recently read on social media that an ex-employee of Naughty Dog, Dave Ballard, claims he was sexually harassed when he worked at Naughty Dog. We have not found any evidence of having received allegations from Mr. Ballard that he was harassed in any way at Naughty Dog or Sony Interactive Entertainment. Harassment and inappropriate conduct have no place at Naughty Dog and Sony Interactive Entertainment. We have taken and always will take reports of sexual harassment and other workplace grievances very seriously. We value every single person who works at Naughty Dog and Sony Interactive Entertainment. It is of utmost importance to us that we maintain a safe, productive workplace environment that allows us to channel our shared passion for making games. I believe Sony themselves did put out a statement to some outlets that was essentially restating what Naughty Dog said, and then Neil Druckmann, who is sort of like the face of Naughty Dog at this point. He was the writer-director or co-director of Uncharted 4 and is directing the upcoming Last of Us 2, linked to that on his Twitter and called it a, quote, important statement, but didn't make any other public comments about it. I am caught up on all this on Monday morning, but it sounds like some shit went down. Danica, I know that you weighed in pretty early on this.
Yeah. Well, we were sharing, like, Austin, Austin and I were talking about this in our Discord, like, the moment that it was happening, because I think Naughty Dog's statement, at least from my perspective and many others' perspectives, is borderline just completely dismissing these claims. Like, they're saying that they found no evidence, but they're not saying anything about looking into it further.
Right.
I compare this a little bit to like the what happened with Nick Robinson and Polygon's statement originally, which right away they basically said that they were going to be, you know, doing a thorough investigation. Right. And that's really all Naughty Dog needed to do at this point in time.
Right. They should have, like, these things to do a thorough investigation takes more than a 24-hour period or less than a 24-hour period, right?
Because especially on the weekend.
Especially on right. the weekend, because you need to talk to people. You can't just look at records, because most harassment of this behavior, and Danica, you pointed this out on Twitter, right? Like, this isn't, it doesn't have a paper trail. You said, like, harassment rarely has a paper trail. Like, that's totally true.
Yeah, and even in Dave's tweets, he said that this stuff happened over the phone.
Right.
So, of course, they didn't find evidence in 20 hours, you know, overnight on a Saturday, because his tweets straight up said that this discussion happened over the phone. I don't know, like, what the quid pro quo stuff entailed and if that was, like, him handed a contract or something like that to sign.
Right, right.
But either way, if he didn't sign it, that is shredded and gone.
Right. There's not like a, there's not going to be some file on a computer somewhere that says, okay, and of course he was harassed and therefore, mm-hmm. and we're going to pay him to be quiet and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not how this stuff plays out. And again, like, the for me, the most important thing is that the way that you do a thorough investigation or something like this is through interviewing the people in the workplace. It's through having an ongoing, you know, a deeper, investigation of how something like that could happen in general. You end up investigating not only did this thing happen, you say, like, we're going to reevaluate all of the procedures that we have to make sure that, like, the a situation that could lead to this to happen is in place, that to make sure that stuff can't, you know, happen, or maybe not can't, but that there are protections in place to prevent it as well as we can or as best as we can. And it's just like the quick turnaround time on it, especially on the weekend where it will get buried, feels, and I'm not, this is an allegedly, right? This is not me saying this is what's happening, but it gives the impression that this is protecting your ass. It's covering your ass. It's not, actually taking the steps needed to protect, or to protect your workers, right. to protect the people who are at risk of harassment.
And quite the contrary, they're naming him in this statement going out to their, like, 1.9 million Twitter followers or whatever, you know.
Right.
I don't think that's protecting anybody at all.
The thing that I found really distressing here, because I actually have been through a mill like this not too long ago in an unrelated job. But when you end up with HR because something untoward is going down at work, there's always this part of you that's worried, like, who's HR really representing?
Right.
Are they advocating for? That depends a lot on the HR department, and in a lot of cases, who is the HR manager? But is HR there just to tamp things down and make sure the ship keeps sailing smoothly and nothing gets out that will, like, reflect badly on the management or the company? Is that their role? Or is their role as sort of internal ombudsman and protector of employee interests? Both things are possible in an organization.
Totally.
Sometimes even within the same HR department. But when you find yourself needing to call on that, there's always this part of you that's like, am I about to get hung out to dry here?
Right. Right. Are they basically an extension of PR, or are they worker representation? And you can have both. I've definitely worked with HR people. I have a good friend who's an HR who I used to actually work with like a decade ago at a job completely out of the industry, but who I know from experience and from talking to him in terms of what his projects are currently, it's almost always about, like, trying to get employees better benefit packages and trying to make sure that, you know, things like when I first started there, it was one of those situations where it was like, oh, you worked in a kind of a menial job in the company hierarchy, you were probably an immigrant and you probably worked on a different floor than everybody else. And, like, he's tried to address that so that there's actually better integration through the company and blah, blah. Like, HR can do those things. I've also worked for HR or for companies where HR is like damage control is like, when things go wrong, how do we make sure that upper management is protected and the IP is protected?
And a big part of that damage control, and a big part of that damage control is exactly what kind of this report seems to be treading on, which is what gets recorded and what doesn't.
Right. Like,
a lot of things that happen, HR will sometimes like use the phrase, like, it doesn't rise to the level of an incident or something like that, which means that they'll hear you out. You'll sit in their office and you'll say exactly what went down. And it's possible you even get a sympathetic response. Like, yeah, that is pretty fucking bad. That's completely unacceptable. We'll have a word. But it doesn't rise to the level of being an incident that we're going to record. Mm-hmm. What that means is that you can have a lot of things happen within a company that, in terms of paper trail,
right,
there is nothing on file that says, you know, so-and-so made an allegation or so-and-so made complaints. And so it's easy to make a statement like this because what HR decided to like write down, from the company perspective was recorded history as something that happened, is very fungible. And so when I see a statement like this, we have not found any evidence of having received allegations. That is weasel wording that from personal experience, I know there's a lot of things that not having received allegations can cover that absolutely happened. And the only way you're really going to get to the bottom of it is by exactly what you're saying, talking to people, talking to coworkers, talking to supervisors, talking to people who are friends of the involved parties within the company. And you're not going to do that on the weekend. And you certainly aren't going to like convince me you're doing this in good faith when your immediate response is a denial that sort of reflexively relies on internal paperwork.
Right. And that was already really frustrating for me as like a person in this community who has seen again and again people's allegations of being sexually harassed or assaulted be dismissed or be thrown into the court of public opinion with shade, and like there has been a bad history of that inside of gaming. But then I like did the second mistake. And I want to be clear, the biggest problem with all of this is that someone may have been sexually harassed. Like, that is obviously bigger than the thing I'm about to say in terms of actual wound. But the thing that followed was the thing that made me mad about the culture of gaming and like the industry and the state of the culture that we've built to promote a certain sort of viewpoint, which is like I rolled down into the old comments, into the old tweets, and it's like, at least it wasn't we canned The Last of Us 2. I'd be more upset by that than harassment, to be honest. And
yeah.
And like that response shows up again and again on Twitter, on NeoGAF, on forums, other places. And it's just like so frustrating that we have built a culture that so firmly has built a notion of brand loyalty and like product fascination and obsession over like the cost of living, over like a person's actual experience. And like, it fucking sucks. It's just so demoralizing. And I know that it's not a thing that's only unique to gaming. Like, I know that if this happened on the set of a Marvel movie, we would have people saying, okay, but the next Avengers isn't delayed, right? Like, I know that would happen, but like, this is the industry I'm in. And so it just fucking sucks, man. Ugh. And I don't know what it comes from.
It also doesn't help that when the way Twitter works is that, so when, I'm not saying there aren't plenty of people that like hold that viewpoint legitimately and are awful and toxic and gross, but like also the way like Twitter works is like, so I saw some of like you folks and other people mentioning that, and it's like, all right, well, quick over on, you know, the Naughty Dog tweet. And so when you click that, you know, the first tweet underneath it is that tweet that, it wasn't the only one, but there's like one in particular that got people rolling. And because that's the one that got responded to, because the engagement, because the algorithm, that's the one that got like the hugest response because it was so aggressively ugly and disgusting. It ends up blowing it up in a way that probably wasn't necessary if like the algorithm, like if, you know, if the system was working as intended, where it's like, that's not the one that has to be surfaced like right away, right? Because like by its sheer existence right below the fold ensures that it's going to create like an even larger reaction when that's not necessarily like the comment that needs to be stickied to the fucking top.
Yeah, well, and the other thing there, to be clear, like that was very soon after also, so it was one of the first statements Nights, which
yes,
is
that
from
too, yeah.
a fan. And it's not the only one. Like there was the Neil Druckmann one. The wildest thing about that was like one of the top tweets to that in response was just like, look at all my Last of Us stuff. I have the guitar. Check out all the merch I have.
Yeah.
Like validation. And if it's a percent of a percent, it's still too much. Like we totally. Still fucked up. Like I don't know how to make this industry develop empathy with, you know, in the fan bases. I don't know how yet to, I mean, outside of coverage and covering it the way that we try to cover everything, you know, and try to bring a degree of like bring a spotlight to events like this when you know things like this happen, and in general try to build a notion that this is an industry where people live and where people work, and not just like a product factory. It's not just a belt that slowly rolls out one new Last of Us game every 3 years, you know, that's being made by machines. Like, it's being made by people. And when you see something like this potentially happen, like even potentially, and your first response should be like, oh man, fuck, I hope that didn't happen. I hope that this person is okay. And if it did happen, I believe that this allegation is, you know, I'm going to trust the person who was saying this until investigations really do say otherwise. And I hope it's not happening to other people. Like, I hope people are okay. Like, the terrible thought is, like, this doesn't only happen to this person. This is ongoing. There are other people who are scared to lose their jobs. And, like, that's what's scary. I don't know.
I mean, I think it requires folks, like, right? So part of the reason this is allowed to persist is because there's the theory that, well, Neil Druckmann isn't saying it, so I'm allowed to persist in this. Like, if Neil Druckmann right. was to it requires people in positions of power to say, like, to vocalize what we're saying, right? Like, it's one thing right. for, like, Waypoint to do it, but it's, like, for a lot of people, well, of course Waypoint's going to say that. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't say that we shouldn't continue to say that, but it requires people in positions of power who, like, it means a lot more if Neil Druckmann was to say that directly to his fans than it does for us to articulate that. You know what I mean? Like, it requires someone like that saying, like, we think that, even if he thinks it didn't happen here, he's like, but we need to take this seriously. We need to investigate it. You need to you need to detach the product from like that. Like, if Neil said that, he'd piss off a lot. I mean, as he has in the past when he's brought in like Anita Sarkeesian to consult on Naughty Dog's games. Like, there are moments where folks like Neil Druckmann and Naughty Dog as a studio have, you know, been public and like pushed back on their audience in a way that have pissed off a lot of those same people. Like, I would not be shocked if a lot of the same people who are upset about like Anita Sarkeesian consulting on Naughty Dog games, like, are the same people that have the kind of response that we're talking about here. And it requires folks like Neil to step up and like to take, you know, whatever the flack they're going to get from their audience
to say more than,
because they need to say it. Like, they it can't just be, well, because I, you know, partner with folks like Anita, because like I do a hashtag on something unrelated. Like, the thing, like, when it really matters is like when it's in your own home.
Yeah.
And like, that's when you vocalizing it means the most. And when by not vocalizing it says the most.
He just linked out to this thing, right?
It's a lot easier to talk about other people's shit than it is to talk about your own.
Well, and in this case, all he did was link out to the statement. Like, he didn't, there was no personal commentary. He basically said, take a look, y'all, and like linked out to this statement that was already not great. It was an important statement, is what he said. And like, no, the important statement would have been from him saying, I am committed to blah, blah, blah. Like, that would have been the place where he could have said what his own personal investment was. I don't know. Danica, what would have been a proper response? Like, what would have it looked like if this had happened? If you were at Naughty Dog? Because that's the other thing. Is like, I think about the other people at Naughty Dog and wonder what their minds are going through.
I mean, I would absolutely be very disappointed if I worked there. And I, like, A, I think that historically you see more cases of women dealing with things like sexual harassment and assault. And I think men are often raised to like keep this stuff inside and not talk about it and have pride and just shut up. And so being a man who works in games, who, you know, is a public person on Twitter and a lot of people know who he is, to be that person and to come forward and to be called a liar by, you know, 50%+ of the people responding to this statement is scary. And it scares me, like, as a woman in games, and as someone who has, like, been a victim of sexual harassment and assault, to just see the way that people are reacting. Like, I think that it's terrifying seeing, like, AAA game dev and publisher fans reacting the way that they're reacting. Like, I'm not super surprised. Mm-hmm. But also, it's terrifying, you know, being someone in games responding to this thing that's going on in games and having, like, my mentions be filled with people
right.
saying shit like, oh, you're gonna suck Sony's dick for a Last of Us code, or even one person was just like, suit yourself if you want to miss out on a great game. Like, what the fuck?
What does a corporate dick look like?
Just a PlayStation. Like, it's just a PlayStation.
Okay. Just like a regular old school, like, PlayStation, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it's right. just a, yeah, it's just, it's like the, a PlayStation 1.
Right.
Like,
it's the first box. Console you launch. It's the, whatever your first console is, that's your dick. Yes. That's your corporate dick.
And the balls are the two controllers.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Not so. DualShock, though. It's pre-DualShock. Just Mm-mm. regular. Yeah.
No analog mm-hmm. sticks on mm-hmm. there. Just buttons. Mm-hmm.
Just buttons. That's old all school. You need. Old school buttons. That's right.
But it's terrifying. And, like, I really hope Naughty Dog comes out and says something else and makes not only their fans and people in the games community who are reading this stuff feel safe, but their employees. Because I know that if I was working at Naughty Dog and I was a victim of harassment in the past and I saw something like this, I would not feel very safe in my right. workspace.
Right. Because that is, again, like, the thing that I think we often do in cases like this is we go, like, okay, what would happen, like, sorry, I just did it again, right? Which is, like, by we, I mean dudes. When dude, the thing that, like, I do as a dude, speaking for myself, is like, ugh, if I was there, I would feel shitty. And, like, oh, wait, no, I could also be a woman who had been sexually harassed before, and I would do more than feel shitty, I would feel unsafe. And, like, it mm-hmm. is super important to expand what an individual's, like, perspective is on a situation like this, and think about, like, different positions that you could be in. In that relation, including, like, what do you do when you're the person in management and you see this happening? How do you respond? You know, who do you get in touch with? What do you do if you're at a place and you feel like HR is not taking your concerns seriously? One is put them in writing as soon as possible.
Right.
Like, email HR with the allegations. If you feel like they are not writing down those allegations after that meeting, put them in writing, BCC yourself on a different address, like, get it fucking, like, do your best to get some official thing written, ideally with like, a response from them saying that they've received it, like, as soon as possible. Like, start, it sucks, but, like, part of working in a system like this is thinking about how you can keep yourself safe just in case something terrible happens, you know?
Well, also, and because so many of these things go, you know, without a paper trail, it's the anxiety of feeling like you have to record every conversation that you're having
right.
is really scary. And this is unrelated to, like, work or any, like, harassment allegations. But at my previous apartment, like, my building management was doing this to me, where there were a million things going wrong, and I would reach out to them and they would ignore me and make up a bunch of lies and all of this stuff. And it was super helpful when I ended up getting a lawyer to help me out that I had, like, all of these emails that I had sent them with no response.
Right. Totally.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, I'm going to put you in my shoes for a second. There I was opening Discord. I'm in a Discord with a number of other friends and people, and I got a message. We all saw a message, I think, from one Casey Malone. Are we familiar? Is everyone on this call familiar with Casey?
I am, unfortunately.
Rob, do you?
I don't think I am.
You should follow Casey on Twitter.
Casey's good.
Wow. Oh. Dragged.
Honestly, unfollow Patrick to follow Casey Malone.
Wow. Patrick's fine with that too.
I don't check my tweets on the weekends. Do what you want.
Casey is a Casey's a comedian in Boston, friend of ours, friend of the Giant Bomb people, like, you know, in the extended family of this of the internet. Funny Twitter person, and he messages and he says, "I'm playing this app HQ, which is like a live game show you play on your phone, and it's the most Black Mirror shit imaginable." And I like didn't know what the fuck he was talking about, and then what I realized is like. It is a game show that you play at certain times. I think the next game is 3 p.m. Danica, is that right? Have you checked today?
I haven't checked today, but I'm sure it is.
Okay. 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. It is a trivia game in which you answer trivia and can win real money. Real money. Like, there's no... I'm not buying in, right? There's no, like, oh, I'm going to put in money to the pot and then... You win a trivia game against other thousands of other real players, and if you win, you win money. And like that by itself is maybe not that big of a deal, but there's a live host who's reading chat and who is shot in like ultra HD and is wearing suits and has a he just has a look. I don't
he's
how
very
would you describe
excited.
Scott, he, our friend Scott.
He looks like he looks like a. Brooklyn like a Brooklyn real estate guy who is gonna ask you out potentially like after showing you an apartment.
I'm gonna link the rest of the show here to an image of our friend Scott and to HQ in general. It's the weirdest thing. I guess the closest comparison is like 1 versus 100 from the Xbox Live days, and it's just I thought I was going to hate this from the bottom of my heart because it's a live video host asking me what the most downloaded iPhone app of 2016 was. But there is something really weird about being in like a 2000 person chat and looking at like a very crisp, very detailed. I think the Black Mirror comparison is also just like in terms of production value, it's like very bubbly and very... like pristine.
I also think we should explain just like it's an app that you open up.
Yes.
And you get a notification whenever they're going to go live with a game show. I think most of them are like 12 questions. There is a chat, like a Periscope style chat at the bottom of the screen that is just like an endless flow of people calling Scott hot or giving away answers and getting banned.
I didn't know you could get banned.
Yeah, you get banned. But also, I have a screenshot, Austin, of you in the chat when we were in there at the same time.
What did I say?
A screenshot of you saying, "I hate 2017.
What's the screenshot of you say?
The screenshot says, "Hello, I'm Danica. Like, I'm Gamer Girl." Because I got Gamer Girl as a username.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, so you answer. Everybody goes on. It pops up a question. You have like 5 seconds to answer. It's really not enough time to Google things. You answer the question. If you get it right, you move on. If you get it wrong, you're eliminated, but you can still see the game and interact with the chat. And then the people who end up at the end, if there's one or more people, they split whatever the amount of money is that they're giving away.
Okay. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This second picture of Scott is a little troubling.
Why is that? Is it like, because it looks like he's been like made from parts?
It's a little bit of that, but more it's... have you ever seen the movie They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
No.
Which is about the...
What?
It's about Depression era dance marathons.
Okay, wait, slow down.
Well, hold, we gotta back up.
Rob, you're bringing a lot of fire right now.
Can you set up this show a little more?
Okay, well, it's a movie with Jane Fonda.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? And in the Depression, a craze that formed was dance marathons where people like did like ballroom dancing. For like days on end, and it's this really dark, bleak drama around a particularly sadistic dance marathon where people are like literally dropping dead of exhaustion on the dance floor. And by the end of the movie, everybody has gone from looking like composed and gorgeous and in their best like formal wear to looking like Scott in the second picture. A little bit washed out, a little bit disheveled.
He seems...
And no real light left in those eyes.
That's the thing!
He's also like a comedian, like a New York, L.A. comedian.
Well, and his whole thing is like he has this whole like vibe of disinterest. He's almost like a Jackbox like host.
Okay.
Where like he wants to be doing this because presumably someone is paying him, but like he can't be bothered to care about the fact that 1,100 people just lost the possibility that they were going to win $500 tonight. He, you know, like, oh, 1,100 people got knocked out on that last one. Must have been tough.
He also, like moves on. He has all these bits to, like, every show, and I wonder if any of them are scripted at all. Like, I think Casey brought up he did, like, a 45-second, like, Borat, like, my wife
impression. 2017. Uh-huh. Right. One of those again.
And then last night he spent about 15 seconds using the word lit in different ways, which ended up on it. We're getting litty.
Man, I'm downloading this app. Uh-huh.
You should. Man,
you sold me on this.
This other group chat I'm in, just every time it's ready to be HQ time, the whole chat blows up with, it's HQ. And I'm not happy about it at all.
But you're fascinated.
I'm so fascinated. I'm never going to put this phone down. Like, I'm going to try to play every time now.
I was pretty upset last night because it was like the $500 game. And I think Jeff, myself, you, Casey, or no, you missed it.
I got knocked out.
Casey, Matt Pasquale, we were all in it. We were like all trying to win that $500. And the last question that they asked, we were all already out of the game. The last question was, what was the first video game to feature real life baseball players? And the answer of the question...
Does anybody know the answer to that on the call?
Anybody know?
Well, it's multiple choice, right?
It's multiple choice. But the right answer wasn't on the multiple choice answers.
That is the problem.
Wait, what?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So the answer that was the right answer was RBI.
That was going to be my guess.
Yeah. Which came out in 1988. Jeff brought up that the actual first video game to feature real-life baseball players was Micro League Baseball, which came out in 1984.
Right. It's a four-year difference. That's a meaningful difference.
That's a big difference. I tweeted at them. I tweeted at HQ Trivia, and I said, this was wrong, and we've been robbed. And they faved.
You said all caps. You said all caps. The first baseball game to feature real players was Micro League Baseball, not RBI. And then 5 exclamation points, and then all lowercase. We've been robbed.
And the only fave on that entire tweet is from HQ Trivia.
They know. They know what they did.
They know.
HQ Trivia.
They know.
Give us that money. Split up that $500 between all of us.
This is the first app that I have allowed to send me push notifications in years.
But like, this is the thing that like I don't know that they have like a like they're not working from a clear trivia source. The other day there was a question that was like, "What's the first cooking oil? Like, what's the first time anyone cooked anything in oil?" And the right answer was sesame seed oil, apparently. And Scott was like, "That's the first one our researchers found anyway." And like, what? You're not inspiring a lot of confidence, Scott. You went on Wikipedia? Is that what you mean? You went on Wikipedia and you're like, well, it's the first oil.
Ask this guy on Reddit.
Exactly.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Fuck, man. This reminds me of, I was listening to the latest Idle Thumbs podcast this morning, and they mentioned an intriguing video game that has been on Steam since late August. I don't know how I haven't heard of it. It's called Comedy Night?
Yeah.
I'll just read the description. It's on Steam. Do you have the talent to face off against other comedians in a live comedy show contest? See how your material holds up to the face of brutal audience members who vote you off, or the relentless smack talk from other performers. Now, according to Idle Thumbs, this is just like who can be more racist, which is like not shocking that that's immediately where this is go. But I am... It's $5. I have to know more about this game.
If you want to know more, there is a Donkey video on this game. This is where I heard about this video or about this
game. Comedy Night,
About Comedy Night, and it was not a good video.
Installing.
I almost like assigned this to you when it first came out, Patrick. Like, seriously, I was almost like, I should send Patrick in. I should put Patrick. But it was in the middle of doing like a big reported story that was really dark and heavy, and it felt like it would just be cruel of me.
Too over the edge.
Right, exactly. But you know what? Right now, you don't have that much on your plate, right? You should go to comedy night and see how that feels. You should go in, get your best material together.
Wait, I have to perform?
You could.
I'll download some jokes. I will outsource. I will find some jokes.
Okay, go to Google jokes. Search. Google jokes.
Funnyjokes.comedycentral.com.
Oh,
got it.
Uh-huh.
Funny jokes. Thousands of our
All right, I've
best
clicked.
Clean jokes from Reader's Digest.
There we go.
Like some,
you need clean jokes.
Dad jokes. Clicking.
There you go.
Clean jokes. Dan Nanan.
this one is
100% clean.
100% clean jokes.
Mildly
just
racist.
Call Patrick, please God. Do Dan Nanan jokes. Do you know about, y'all know about Dan Nanan?
Who?
Dan Nanan?
The millennial sensation.
All right, you shut your fucking mouth, Rob. You didn't read
the
story.
The millennial
last...
sensation is Scott Rogowski or whatever.
from HQ.
From HQ.
Dan Nanan, there was that amazing story about this guy last year that was, maybe early this year, was it like a BuzzFeed story or a...
Wait, is this the guy who like lies about his age?
Yes, that guy.
Yes.
I definitely read about that story.
Someone should go read that story. If you haven't read that story, please go read that story. It's just like about how he lies. He's like 52 and he lies about being like the first millennial comedian, basically. it's so good.
Oh, God.
He's...
Here's, okay, Dad's brilliant business plan. Scene. A conversation with my friend's father. Who
Wait, is this you? So you're up on stage. I need to get my picture.
Yeah. This is just a rehearsal.
Up next, everybody. That was really great. Thanks, Sal. Shout outs to Sarah. They're great material. Next up on the stage, we're bringing out the man, the myth, the legend, the woke gamer.
Woo! Asthma eating.
All right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for the video. I got one joke. You know, that's all I got, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. So let me set the scene. It's a conversation.
Nice hair!
My...
Woohoo!
Thank you.
Dad!
It's a conversation with my friend's father, and he knows I do web design. So just like keep that in mind, like, put that in your head.
This is a good setup.
Here's the father. I have a business idea. How hard is it to make a Facebook? And I tell him, oh, it's very easy. And then he comes to me and he says... He doesn't mean to make a... Oh, this is my friend. Sorry, I screwed up this joke already.
Boom!
Hey, no. Oh, yeah. So my friend says, he doesn't mean to make a Facebook profile. He means to remake all of Facebook. And then I says, oh, that's very hard. And then the father says, oh, okay. Oh! But thanks everyone.
Wait.
Donate to my Patreon.
Wait.
Patreon.com/jokes. Jokes.
Where did that? I missed the joke.
I think I need that shitty joke explained to me.
I need this broken down. So you were. Oh my God.
Okay, so there were four people involved in this conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, there
father,
were four?
There's me. There's the friend. No, I guess three.
Three. The
okay. father. And then me, and then the friend.
The Father, so. The Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Holy joke.
And the Holy joke.
Okay, yeah. The Holy joke.
Spelled
holy
with a G. Line. Spelled with a G-H.
Yeah.
The Holy joke. The Holy joke.
The Father, he's got a business idea. He's like, how hard is it to make a Facebook?
Uh-huh.
And then me, a web designer.
Ah.
So it's very easy.
I see.
And then the friend points out, hey, you guys aren't really communicating. He says, he doesn't mean to make a Facebook
right.
profile.
Uh-huh.
He means to remake all of Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And
then me, a web designer, says... Oh, that's very hard. And then
right?
the father goes, oh, okay.
Classic punchline. Oh, okay. It's like, you know, yes and. That's like an introduction to improv. But at a higher level, you learn that sometimes you don't have to go yes and. Sometimes you can go, oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
All right, in this scene, you're a duck and a lawyer. And then your response can be like, oh, okay. The end. End scene. That's the best it's going to get. Just imagine a duck who's a lawyer.
That joke is funnier than anything that I've experienced in the South Park game that I've played for somehow for 8 hours.
Oh, can we talk about
no.
that? Is that
yes,
a thing we can
please.
Talk about a little bit before
it's,
we finish?
It's aggressively unfunny, and
oh,
this is someone
man.
That I mean, like, let's you can't separate South Park and politics and how they say things, but the South Park, The Stick of Truth, like, was at its best, like, a genuinely, like, funny send-up of, like, RPG tropes. Like, it was clearly made from, like, a place of, like, they really love video games, and they put South Park into it, and there was the novelty. In the same way there's a novelty when any, like, animated show becomes either a video game or, like, a movie. There's, like, a novelty to, like, The Simpsons movie or The South Park movie. Like, you don't do it again because the novelty wears out. And this second South Park game, like, other than South Park feeling out of step in this political moment, like, even if you strip that away, like, it's a bad video game. It's not funny. Like, the jokes, it's just, I'm shocked at, like, how subpar it feels. It's bad all over. And, like, I'm trying not to have, like, a judging the people that have written reviews of this, or, like, I was laughing the whole time. Like, I don't know what you were laughing at. Like, I genuinely cannot figure out, like, this doesn't feel like a, like, oh, different senses of humor. I'm just like, did you think it was funny to, like, have one of the primary mini games to, like, generate experience points in this game be, like, a shitty rotate the analog sticks to shit in the toilet, like, 15, 20 different times? Like, that's one of, like, the central mini games in this. Like, the...
Which doesn't mean that you don't think that shit is funny. You like...
No, fart jokes can fart be... Jokes I can be very laugh funny. At a fart joke. I laugh when my kid farts. So, like, farts still make me laugh.
Right.
This game is just... It's... I'm genuinely shocked at how bad it actually is. And it's not... Like, the RPG stuff is not fun to play. It's like, they tried to go... I think what the pitch was for this one was... The RPG part of the Stick of Truth was pretty light, but it had, like, some pretty decent jokes about, like, video games and RPGs in a South Park context. Right. They executed that part really well, and like I said, it came from a place of Obsidian, who gets RPGs, and South Park guys, who, like, clearly played a lot of video games. Like, there was a genuine, like, earnest nature to it that outside of, like, the shittier parts of South Park's humor, like, that worked really well in a surprising way. And this one, the humor's not that funny, but they've way played up the video game part of it. And, like, there's a huge crafting system that doesn't work at all.
Is poop also involved there? Is there also shit and farts?
Shits that, like, you get rated on your shits on a scale of how well you do the mini game, and, like, the higher the better you do, the higher, like, shit
I've
that
never
comes out
been more
that can
upset.
Then use in the crafting
I've
system.
I've never been more upset that I don't have a camera to look into, to look perplexed and, like, are y'all hearing this shit for right now? Like, okay.
And it's, like, the setup is, like, oh, well, this one, we're not sending off, you know, like, sending up a game mechanics. It's like, oh, it's superheroes and, like, the Marvel, like, and there's a world where, like, yeah, there's probably a lot of jokes to be mined out of, like, bullshit comic movies and franchises and stuff like that. And that's, like, essentially the setup for this story is, oh, like, the South Park kids and the different, you know, citizens have set up, like, different superhero franchises. And it's just, it's bad. It's aggressively bad in a way that I'm shocked by. And the game part about it, it's clear that it's not made by Obsidian, because Obsidian knows how to make RPGs, and it seems like they found a way to, like, take, like, the South Park guys and, like, mash that into an RPG in a way that worked to some degree. And it's not that this isn't, like, made with a lot of, you know, a lot of effort gets put into bad games. And
You even wrote that one story about the reasons why you should play bad games or whatever.
And I, you know what? You probably shouldn't pay $60 for this, but this is an instructive video game, I think, in a lot of ways, for the reasons it doesn't work, especially if you played the first one and the reasons that did work. So, I'm probably going to put a little more time into it, because I do want to write a piece that is sort of picking up on, like, when we last had a conversation about South Park and the way it handles race in this game. And the send-ups they try to have, and they try to do more of that, but, like, just kind of working through as someone that did enjoy South Park and what that meant, and then what it's like to play a South Park game in 2017, that, like, leans far heavier into jokes about, like, trans people and race, but clearly the jokes are meant to come from a place that, like they're meant to portray that, like, they actually know what they're talking about, like, that it isn't just, like, a complete, like, we're just, like, subtly being racist, haha. Like,
right.
Like, the jokes about, like, trans people and about race are they are clearly coming from a place that like, yo, like we know what's up. Like we're making jokes that like are able to like cross the like you can appreciate this. Like even as someone that's like progressive, like they're trying to write progressive jokes. One, they don't have the cultural cash to like to try and do one of those. But also, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, the one that I heard that like felt like it missed the mark was that there's a moment where you can you get to determine what your character's gender is during a talk with who is it?
It's like a school counselor.
Yeah,
or, no, it's,
is it Mackie?
Something? No, maybe it is.
Okay,
there's a couple conversations. I think you're right. I think it is with Mackie. And like you walk in and you can like to set it up. Like you at the beginning of the game, you can choose your gender, but then you have this conversation with Mackie, and then you can like have a conversation in which like you can at that point then change your gender to male or man woman or ambiguous.
Right.
You don't have to pick a gender, and you can go back at any point in the game and then change it if you want. And like the way they set that up is like them seeming to be trying to portray that, hey, like we actually recognize that
there are
like,
some non-binary folks in the world.
Yeah,
there are
like,
people
there
who are agender.
Gender fluidity,
right.
And like that's even what that race joke is trying to do with like making it, it's a harder game if you make your character black. I see the place it's coming from.
Right.
It's just that they shouldn't, if they wanted to try and make a game that started telling jokes like this, I'll give them enough rope to say that maybe they're capable of doing it. I don't know if that's true, but if they wanted to, South Park was not the vehicle to tell it. And so, problems with a lot of the humor in this game is that this does not feel right coming out of the characters of South Park. And if you wanted to build a world where you wanted to try and tell jokes like this, one, South Park has too much
baggage
to try and do that. And two, it just does not work in that context. And so it just falls flat. It feels misguided. And even if I try and separate it from that, it's not funny even the way it's coming out. And maybe that's tied up because it's South Park. I don't know.
Well, so like that scene in question ended up being a sequence where I have not played through this sequence. I haven't even had a chance to look up video. But one of the writers and critics who I was reading basically said like that scene then turns into a joke about how like walking on eggshells Mackie is about gender and how like that scene is still a joke. Like it lets you pick non-binary as your gender. It lets you pick, it suggests that gender is fluid, but also is a send up of like PC culture caring too much about being careful around pronouns. And it's like,
right.
I haven't played it. So Patrick, you can tell me if that's true or not, or, I trust the writer who said this.
Yeah. That's in line with, I have not watched like episodes of South Park in probably close to 10 years for any length of time, but I do know that like a recent season, like one of the season long arcs was about a PC principle.
Yeah, PC principle. I watched a bunch of those episodes because I was curious, and like it does the same exact shit, which is like PC principle always has like some good point, but also isn't it funny how this motherfucker cares about shit? And like,
right.
It sucks.
I wonder if they have even a single non-binary or trans person on their staff too.
It's a big team, presumably, right? So who knows? Like I'm always careful because it's not that one person or five. It's not it's rare that those people can be the ones who can stop shitty jokes from getting through. Do you know?
Yeah, there could be a trans level designer that works at Massive, where like that's one of the studios that also worked on. Like when the logo boots up, it's South Park Digital Studios, it's Ubisoft San Francisco, who seems to have been like the central developer, but then it also is like Ubisoft Massive, which made The Division and some other studio, I think a Spanish studio if I recall correctly. And it's like, there's probably a decent shot that there was someone who was trans that worked on this game.
Or,
but it's Matt Stone and Trey Parker running the show.
I wonder like what their consultation process is with stuff like this.
Yes,
or if they even have one.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Nothing I've seen has talked about that. Like, I've looked at some preview coverage, and they're never like, well, we wanted to make sure that we were going to go into these topics, and we wanted to be thoughtful about it, so we wanted to consult with some people. That's one of the things that I think has been so strange, has been seeing that, like, the notion that doing that is such an ask when, given the cost of games, bringing on a consultant or speaking with consultants here or there, like, can really help a project. Like I know from talking to people that like Mafia 3 did talk to some consultants early on in development or at some point in development that like and that those consultants pushed them to change a couple of key things, right? Like, and I, you know, as you know, like during a preview event, I had some issues with some stuff in Mafia 3 that like got through that process. And so like, it's not like a consultant means that everything's going to be great,
right.
But like, it is not like that stuff isn't available for people. But I, you know, I don't know. I'm curious to see how that game shakes out still, you know, as it gets in the hands of people who, I think like you, Patrick, grew up as fans, and maybe drifted away from it and still have some feelings of like nostalgia towards the setting and the characters, and who think like, oh, well, maybe it could still be cool. Like, oh, superhero parody. Like, that sounds fun.
And I think that was my takeaway, having, you know, played, you know, 6 to 8 hours of this, is like, I think that's like, I revisited this thinking, like, I was sort of in, I think like a lot of people who played The Stick of Truth were sort of taken by like how smart the writing was in terms of like its send-ups of like, it was just fun to play a video game that was smartly making fun of video games because it was right in the know, and that kind of satire and comedy is just not, that's just not something you see very often in video games. And playing, you know, interactive version of the show like had a novelty, and so
right.
I think I was able to look past a lot of the other things that I had problems with in South Park because the novelty was like enough for like the 10 hours that game took to finish.
Yeah, I'm hearing this is also long. I'm hearing this is like,
it's double. Like, I've heard, yeah, it's like, yeah, 20 hours if you're kind of just cruising through it, and you know, 30 or more if you want to do all the side stuff. And yeah, I mean, I came back to this thinking, because like, I had listened to, not a couple of months back, while mowing my lawn and just like chewing through some podcasts, I listened to an interview where Bill Simmons, the former Grantland, ESPN, uh-huh, now The Ringer head, and also does a fairly popular football podcast, had Matt Stone and Trey Parker on, and they talked through like the election and Trump and their feelings on Clinton. And it was like, you came away that going, and this is where, when we had this last conversation, I listened to that and thought, like, these guys could be doing a whole lot more. Like, they're clearly, like, aware, like, and come across as really smart and, like, well-read and say the right things on this podcast, but then in their humor, right, they don't seem to allow themselves to get past that, or maybe incapable of getting, you know, maybe their humor is just, that their skill set just, and having done South Park for that long, just, they can't do it. But I think, like you said, like, as someone that has, like, a deep nostalgia for, like, a certain history of, like, when I was a South Park fan and what that meant to me. I mean, it was, like I said before, it's mostly an act of rebellion is what South Park was for, I think, a lot of kids. Was a place to hear dick and fart and swear jokes and not necessarily understand the implications of all that stuff. Is, like, listening to something like that and then seeing this game and being like, fuck. Like, it's just disappointing. Like it's bad, and just saying that a joke isn't funny doesn't excuse if it hurts people. Like, I don't mean to imply that. But it's also that, and then also being disappointed. It's just like, fuck. Like,
the double whammy of disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would,
you
caution people.
Stick with it, or caution, are you
yeah,
bouncing?
I remain curious, and I kind of want it to be my fall. Like, this game's bad, but I sort of want to continue studying why,
right,
it's bad.
Some of,
like,
us are playing Shadow of War for that, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly. That seems like that's become, like, when we did that stream, like, I was not going to be shocked. Yeah. Like, for me, I don't think I need to play that game because I, yeah, think I'll get what I need to know about it from your takeaways on it. But I think it is, I also wasn't going to be surprised if you stuck with it because you kind of just needed to know more about what this thing,
yeah,
was.
And we'll talk about that in the future. I'm gonna try to write some stuff. Danica and Rob, do either of you have a thing that you're playing that you're like, this is, what am I fucking doing, why am I doing this? It's not HQ.
Destiny 2.
Are you still playing? You're still putting
I'm
hours
still
in? I see
I'm
you in our clan chat
it.
I saw you in the weekend. No. You're like, yeah, I'll grind some with you.
Someone was like, hey, we're almost to the max on our clan XP, can someone go in? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it reluctantly, but
boot me up.
I'll go.
I'll get in the robot. Fine.
It's not fun anymore.
Is it like what light level or power level are you?
I'm like 294. I'd be 305 if I was doing everything in the milestones to like get all of the gear. But I'm just I'm over it at this point. I've done everything that everything that there is to do. I don't want to do the raid again. The Nightfalls have been 90%. really, really hard. And there was that one, like, really fun one.
I fucked up.
You fucked up, yeah. I just made two new characters, and I'm
cool looking. They look cool as hell.
Yeah, they look cool, but do I want to start from scratch? Not really. I might get it for PC and then play with a whole new group of people, and then
I'm gonna make a warlock on PC and maybe, you know, maybe join the rad Poplio Pals, Friends of the Table PC clan.
Nice.
Play with some Friends of the Table folks. That might be what I do.
Nice.
Man, it's so weird because I really think Destiny 2 is better than Destiny 1 in a billion ways, but also feel like it's not worth my time to play anymore. And like, I don't know.
Well, anyway. I'm also like 80 hours in, so I think I've put enough time into it.
Yes.
But by the standards of a game like Destiny, 80 hours isn't that much. That's the, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm what I think that game is sort of like making as its pitch is like, man, the fun never stops here in Destiny. You just run that content again, and you'll keep getting new stuff out of it. But I think once I realized that, like, oh, all that really mattered were the powerful engrams. Mm-hmm. Like, all the other loot I get is just going to be, like, the same. It's going to be different versions of, like, the same light level stuff.
Right.
And they have, like, special perks, and, you know, that stuff's cool. But after a point, it's like, I'm not getting any stronger. The Nightfalls are still going to be nightmarishly hard. Right. And the only thing that's going to, like, get me through that is getting these powerful engrams via this weekly checklist. And that transition mentally to, okay, well, now I got to do this every week. The moment I realized that, I was like, or what if I didn't? Like, well, what if I didn't make Destiny my part-time job? And besides, I do have the PC version that's looming. I'm going to have to
Here's a perk of getting the engrams that aren't powerful engrams. You get to dismantle your stuff, and you get to go and talk to Banshee, who's hot, and then he gives you an engram that isn't that powerful, and then you get to do the same thing. So, like, I'm down, you know?
Great.
Hey, Banshee, what's up? Hey. You run a lousy store.
Hey, Banshee, fantastic. You up? What you doing?
So, in terms of things that, what have I gotten myself into?
Yeah.
I started playing NHL 18.
Oh, that just dropped, right?
Yeah, a little while ago.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten into an NHL game since, like, I think NHL 11, NHL 10. It was right after the Hawks won, I think, their first championship. Mm. You know, they've won three in the last seven seasons or so.
Is Rob bragging? Is that what's happening right now?
You know, I mean, look, some people call it a dynasty. I don't know. Like, you can call it what you want. But
you did a lot of work for him. I know you definitely, you were really out there on the ice, really giving it your all.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think, Coach Q, you know, Joe Q, you know, said that I was probably the MVP of his fifth line.
Okay. Okay. the 32nd man, Rob Zachney.
Yeah. So I've been playing NHL 18 and I'm like, this time I'm doing it right. Like, I'm not going to become, I'm not doing what I did in the previous editions where, like, I learned a few things and just tried to abuse mechanics and, like, gaps in the AI to try to, like, make those shitty things work. Now I am going to play this game and I'm going to master
right.
the skill stick.
Right. Good.
And are you familiar with the skill stick?
Is it like the truck stick?
What's the truck stick?
What is that?
You don't know the truck stick?
What?
Patrick, do you remember the truck stick? No?
No.
I'm like gripping my armrests on this chair. Like, what's
back in the day?
Where are we going?
Back in the day, Madden, it used to be a trick stick, and then they started calling it the truck stick. Those are the hit stick. The right thumb stick. Or the right.
Oh, what do you use? You use a juke and
juke
you use that
or
to...
truck. You didn't see it, but I did like a truck animation. Also, I'm a virtual
animation.
Character.
What is a truck animation?
A truck. You bring your arms together and you like do biceps and your fists touch and you're I'm trucked.
Oh.
I'm trucking right now.
Okay.
You just juke left or right or like lower the shoulder and truck forward. They called it the truck stick. There were a bunch of ads around it about how like this year's Madden has the truck stick.
Mm-hmm.
Did that stick? Is that still around?
I just did a search for Truck Stick Madden, and there's a very good image that I think if we were the sort of podcast to just steal images from the internet and use them as our podcast image, this one of Madden that just says in like a bad font, "Get trucked up," is maybe a high contender. There's also this other really good one that just it says game number 3, Madden 25, devastating truck, which is one of my many aliases, my aka devastating truck. Is it that basically? Is it like
more nuanced? Juke? And this is where things get bad or good, I suppose. If you have stuck with the NHL series and like followed its evolution and evolves alongside it and grown your appreciation and understanding of video game hockey, I can see the skill stick as it currently exists being a true delight. But
you're not that.
I'm not that. I'm coming into this like 5 years like out of practice, and I was never very good in the first place. Mm-hmm. And the skill stick seems to have evolved a bit. So the idea is your left stick is directional movement controls and all this, but your right stick is what you're trying to express with your hockey stick.
I like that you said express, like an artist's brush.
Well, and that's the thing. It is. Like, that. Like when you're moving the right stick back and forth, for instance, you are you're what's being called you're deking, which is to say you're cutting the stick back and forth so that you're sort of still carrying the puck, but you're moving the stick from side to side on it. So, like, the angle of your stick and where you're holding it relative to your body keeps changing. Right. Your motion doesn't change, the puck's direction doesn't change, but, like, just the target you present on the ice starts to change.
So, like, oh, I want my stick on the left side of this puck, not the right side.
Right, exactly. And where that starts to matter is if you get really good with this system, there's a whole lot of ways to, like, fake defenders out around that, or like cut the puck past somebody who's directly in your way just by knowing how to like manipulate your stick, like play it between their like skates or something, and then pick it up on the other side. You can do that highlight level stuff in this game with this system if you understand how it works.
Do you understand how it works?
I spent a good portion of my weekend playing the tutorials and then replaying them in front of people. Who were like, no, you need to do the toe drag. No, like, not like that. You need to move the stick to the left and then arc it. You arc it under, and that's how you. And I couldn't. I couldn't do it. Like, passes are ending.
Wait, Were you playing in front of pros who understand how to arc the stick?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay. But they were just being.
They were
being
just watching me. They were watching me fail to execute what my nice Canadian hockey coach was trying to instruct, tell me to do, because there are like coaching segments in this tutorial where a really enthusiastic Canadian guy is like, "I can't wait to share with you our love of hockey." And
he's like very polite Canadian.
Yeah, very much so. And they always like hockey continue, like they just keep drawing out that ah, so it's like hockey. Yeah, it's real good. But anyway, so I spent the weekend trying to learn how to play this game and then trying to put it into practice on the ice. And the game does have, like, a lot of good tools for telling you, like, okay, so you're not, you know, your work on defense is really good, but you're not really trying creative passes or your shot selection is really poor. You should try to improve that. And so the game does provide a ton of contextual clues for, like, when it would be a good time to try a special move. But it very much feels like being thrown into like Marvel versus Capcom 3 by complete strangers.
Right, right.
And being told like, no, figure it out. Trust me, you'll feel like Iron Man by the time this is over. But I don't.
Who do you
I don't
feel
that way
who
at
do
all.
You, which Marvel character do you feel like?
Gosh. I don't think I do feel like a Marvel character. I feel like a shitty Capcom character.
Oh no!
I'm feeling pretty beautiful. if I'm being honest.
What's wrong with beautiful Joe?
Nothing. Look, I'm sure there's lots of people who love beautiful Joe.
Oh my god! You're gonna hear from each of them on Twitter today.
Those are really
great.
Good
someone mentioned
what did beautiful Joe do to fucking deserve this shade?
Oh, I think
you could have. There's a whole roster of shitty Capcom characters. Like, that's the one you plucked from?
I don't. I don't want to derail this more than it's being derailed, but just a heads up that there's an HQ round starting in 5 minutes.
All right, we got to get on this. We should end this. There's
time
one
time to get trucked up.
Yeah, I've got
to
get trucked up. There's one email I need to read. This one comes in from Bill, who had a correction for us from our immersive sim conversation on Friday. Bill says, there's one and only iron. There's a one and only ironclad definition of immersive sims, and that is, does the game have bathrooms? And that's, yeah, good point. He says, great show. Can't wait to see what other stuff you tackle on this new format. We are not on that new format, but we sure tackled a lot with the truck stick today on our episode of Waypoint Radio. As always, shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that over at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/waypointvice. And over on waypoint.vice.com, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danica?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/DanicaHarrod.
Patrick Klepek.
You can find me at biggestbeautifuljoefan1.
And Rob Zachney.
You can find me in the Wyatt timeline. Are you happy now?
Oh, you started the Wyatt timeline.
I restarted and saved Wyatt.
How was it go? We'll talk about it. Also, if anyone has like fun, needs like a little way to have fun, just go on Google image search and type in Madden YouTube and just find all the great thumbnails that I've been sharing in our group Discord. It's a good way to spend some time. Also, shout outs to either Sophie or Rob, who are going to be editing this podcast. Shout outs to them.
Oh my God, I didn't even know you were pasting these.
There's a really good image of just Odell Beckham Jr. firing lightning out of his fist.
Good. It's really good.
I feel like the girlfriend wins online match one is problematic.
It's
but
very
can't
bad.
Put my finger on why.
I can't either. She has her hands up like, I don't know how I did it. And then there's a dude who has like four question marks around his head. He's confused.
Also, well, at least in that thumbnail, the Bears won.
The Bears won 20-0 against the Cardinals. Mm-hmm, so
I'll take it.
All right. That's going to do it for us today. Tune in on Friday for another topic-driven show. I think we're going to have a guest, so that'll be fun. Until then, that's going to do it for us. I guess I don't know if I should say Danielle's thing or not now, because someone was like, don't say it. It's her thing. But I think she said I should say it, so...
Just say it.
All right. Be good and be good at it.
Bye.